was so touched because people would call me or text me or find me on Facebook and be like, I'm going to miss her. I'm going to miss her smile. I'll miss meeting her on the street and her saying, let's have coffee. People just missed the person and the moments they shared with her and who she was as a human being.
Kia ora and welcome back to the C Word, Kiwis Talk About Cancer. I'm your host, Helen King, and this is the podcast for cancery people who want real conversations about cancer. If you like what you hear today, subscribe on Spotify and wherever you listen to good podcasts. In this episode, we're going to finish off our look at how cancer impacts families with a person who has experienced cancer ripped through her family from a young age. Anna Tajda was born in Croatia to film actress Jagoda Kalupa and architect Radovan Tajda. The award-winning author, journalist, and creator of Thank You Mama podcast spoke to me from her home in the US about what she has learned about grappling with a loved one having cancer. Anna has experienced cancer in both her parents, and her husband Nick has had testicular cancer twice. Her beloved mother passed away from cancer, which was the inspiration to start her podcast, Thank You Mama. I'm going to pop a link in the show notes so you can listen to her podcast because it really is beautiful. Just the different conversations people have about their mothers and the sometimes complex relationships that we have with our mums. This is Anna's story. It has had a major impact on your life, not only directly in your relationships, but your nuclear family and beyond. I guess I was curious to start with, when was the first time somebody said to you, I have cancer, or so-and-so has cancer?
I kind of grew up with this story and this narrative of this beautiful red-haired, sweet and loving woman that her husband was madly in love with, who got this very rare form of cancer. She died of placenta cancer, which is extremely rare and nowadays healable. It's one of the best cancers you can get nowadays, because I just asked my OBGYN a few months ago when I was there and we talked about it. And she's like, it's like testicular cancer, which my husband had, and it's healable, you know, but back then it wasn't. And my grandfather was a internist. He was a doctor and he was madly in love with her. And it was right after the Second World War. And he sent her all over Europe to try all the different treatments and even take parts in tests trying to save her life, but that didn't work. So in a way, cancer was always present in, you know, my family growing up. So that was the first. And then I remember when I was little, my mom found a lump on her breast, and I remember the terrifying few days while we were waiting for the biopsy. I was preparing for this interview. I was thinking about it on my last hike. I'm like, my mom and I shared so many things. We were like best friends and everything. But this, for instance, is something I'm a little surprised. Like, I shouldn't have known about this. I don't think, you know, unless, of course, you once you get the diagnosis, but to put children under that stress is not necessary.
And it is huge. And those days between knowing that you found something that shouldn't be there and finding out what it is are awful.
Oof.
They're just awful. Horrific.
They're the worst, really.
Yeah.
Worst.
Because you can't help but go to the worst case scenario. I mean, as much as people say, don't Google or don't think about it, your brain is there already.
Yeah, you can't help it. You can't help it. And I kind of, because I was so close with my mom and I loved my mom so much that for me it was unimaginable that that could happen to her. So with her, until the last moment, I didn't want to believe it, even during those days when we were waiting for it. You know, it was obvious, and I still, even in spite of all the other experiences we had with cancer, and I should have known better. And I remember my cousin, who is a doctor, to whom I said, you know, they found this big lump on her lung, and they say it looks soft, so maybe it's a cyst. And I remember the look on his eyes, so clearly I remember the look on his eyes when I should have known, and I still didn't want to believe it.
I think Because my mum had cancer, I think, about 13, 14 years ago in the uterus. I think it was endometrial. And I can remember, I've talked to a few people about this recently, there is something primal about it being your mum getting an illness like cancer. And I remember when my mum and dad showed up on my doorstep where I was living to say mum had cancer, which is very my family, very matter of fact. Yeah. And I just burst into tears. And then the whole next day I was just in bed crying because there was the ego for me. I went right into that little girl of, no, not mum, you know?
Yeah.
So there's something very deep about that, I think.
It is. Yeah. Mums are sacred. Mums are just special. It's cute because I tell my son that I'm like, I know I'm your mum, but I can say it. You've never had a person love you.
Not at all. No, there really isn't. And I guess even going back, you know, your grandmother having cancer and you're talking about growing up, but I mean, your family had massive challenges coming from Croatia and leaving the war. So I know that, you know, your family has weathered a lot in terms of illness, but also huge upheaval. And I know this is a really big question, but I was very curious about what has this taught you around grief and resilience and dealing with the unimaginable?
So I would like to divide the lessons maybe in two things. And one was escaping the war in the 90s, because when the war broke out, and this was right after I had scoliosis as a child, and I went through 6 years of wearing those back braces that go all the way up to your neck, and they're really painful, and it was a very torturous 6 years of my life. And then it didn't help, and I had to go through a very difficult back surgery, and I just recovered from that back surgery when the war broke out. So it was kind of a trauma on a trauma. And when we had the first air raid in Zagreb, where my mom and I lived, my dad had already moved to Vienna. They separated, and he already moved to Vienna, Austria at that point. You know, this war was creeping in slowly through different parts of Croatia, and we somehow always thought, oh, it won't, you know, it won't reach us, it won't happen. But then one Sunday afternoon it did, and we had the first air raid, and we ran into the basement of our apartment building. It lasted for many hours. We were sitting in the basement listening to these fighter jets, and seriously, when you hear that, it's crazy, that noise, where literally the whole house trembles, and waiting to be bombarded. Like, we were waiting for it to happen in a second. So when they let us out, when the air raid was over and they let us out in the evening, mom, I took it so badly. I was sitting in this space, and this is why nowadays, like, for me, I have so much empathy for anybody who's been in a war, especially the children. I just can't imagine what it is and what trauma it leaves. I'm so against it. We should be more developed nowadays in the world than having wars, you know? Anyway, when they let us out and we were still in a blackout, my mom and I decided to go to Vienna. And we thought we were going for only a few days. I packed a little bag and we just packed the most necessary things and left Zagreb that evening on a midnight train. It was crazy. It was insane. Everything was darkened out, and we entered this, even the train was dark, and we thought it's going to be for a few days until everything calms down. And I've spent the next 21 years in Vienna, Austria. There was a huge lesson for me that, you know, that you can build a new life, and that we shouldn't be too attached to our surroundings and our material things, and that it's possible to build a new life in a new country in a new language out of one little suitcase. I always carry that lesson with me, and I did this for a second time, which was a more beautiful reason, because I fell in love with my back then boyfriend, now husband, and I went and basically moved to LA just to see how this will work out, this relationship, with one suitcase again. And that was 10 years ago. And we built a life together and had a child. So for me, one of the most important and biggest lessons in life was not to attach again to these physical things. I used to be very attached to my books and my things and my shoes, you know. And now I'm just, he makes fun of me because I throw things away. I'm like, no, I won't read this book ever again or wear these shoes again. I'm good at just getting rid of stuff because now I feel like they're weighing on me. They're just, I'm ready to move again, you know, like I'm ready for the next. But, oof, speaking of cancer, that's a whole different series of lessons. For me, I think the most important lesson here was that we all have our paths and we all have our ways and we all have our destinies. We talked about it a little, how I've learned that a cancer diagnosis is such an individual thing and every single person has to finds their own way to deal with it and their own spiritual journey through it. And for me, there was a big lesson because I went through the cancer therapies with my dad and my mom twice, and now my dad for the second time and my husband twice. You know, it was very important for me to learn that everybody has their own way dealing with it. Because after my dad, I wanted to treat my husband's diagnosis the same way. And I was like, okay, we know, because when my dad first got sick, my mom and I kind of took things into our hands and he liked us to. My dad was like, okay, you know, and we guided him through this thing and it worked out great the first time. So when my husband got sick, I tried the same thing. I was like, okay, Nick, now you do this. And and my mom and I, our family is a little more holistic. We don't reject Western medicine, but we like to combine things and also a little spiritual and see this as, you know. And my husband was like, you know what, the doctors say he's a very rational person. He went to MIT and studied cognitive science, and he's very like, no, the doctors say this, these are the percentages, this is blah, blah, blah. And he had this way of dealing with it that worked for him. And I have to say, we had some conflicts. It was a big lesson for me, in his case, to lift my hands up and be like, whatever you decide and choose, I'll have your back. And it took me a little to learn it. I'm embarrassed now for my reaction in the beginning, because I was trying to assert my way or my family's way of dealing with it on him, and that only caused friction and it shouldn't have been.
I think that's really normal though. I really do, because I feel, having gone through it with mum and then myself and seeing how people respond, because I, in the, you know, when it happened, went into logic mode as well. Of, right, this is the information, this is what is being suggested to me, these are the statistics, I'm going to do this, this, and this. And I just really internalized and just sort of, I just wanted to get through it. And there are all these people just sort of wanting to help. And it wasn't until I got out the other end and felt so broken that I sort of went, how am I going to put myself back together? Yeah, it's and there's, I feel like there's no right or wrong way to respond to it, because it is such a huge response. It isn't you may not know it at the time, but it's not just physical. It is this sort of enormous thing.
I think as a family member or a supporter or a caregiver, I really think now the right way to respond is to just gently support and not to try force any of your own ideas, or, you know, I never want to do that again. Like, I just help the person on their own journey. Just like when you're teaching a child to walk, you know, you don't just hold them. You sometimes let them go and let them figure out their own balance and things, but they know you have their back. I think that for me would be the right way to respond. I'm just thinking, I wish I never had to respond to this situation again, but we as a family keep on being bombarded. It's insane. My dad just went through his kidney removal surgery. He had bladder cancer 15 years ago, and it was healed for 15 years, and now he's going through that, and there's corona, and we're on the other side of the world, and I feel terrible I'm not there.
It is a lot. I've thought about this with other guests as well, when you know, it is a really tough lesson, and it is something that I sort of feel is so unjust, that there isn't a limit to what one person can go through. Because in my mind, I think, this family's been through a war. you know, and it just, and we know that the Croatian War was, you know, it was really brutal. All wars are brutal. But I guess that's one of the things I've learned as well, is that there, you know, things happen in life, and some people, lots of things happen, and sometimes there's just no logical sort of explanation for it. It just is. And I think that's really hard sometimes as a human who wants to explain everything, to kind of reconcile with the fact that actually sometimes life is just quite unfair.
But, you know, two thoughts here. First, I have a very, very dear friend back home in Vienna. Her life, nothing ever happens. Like, she grew up in the same country. She chose to go into whatever area of her profession and found this nice cheap apartment somewhere that, you know, one of these places where it's a pity to leave it because the rent, you'll never find the cheap rent like this again. So stayed in her own house, the same house, and then couldn't ever find a relationship. So somehow her life is always extremely flat, to the extent where she tries to tease her life, and she's like, okay, now I'm going to quit my job and go to Africa and work as a, you know, aide in Africa, and then everything's going to change. And then she spends 3 years in Africa and comes back home, and her job is still waiting for her, and her apartment is still there, and nothing changes again. And she and I talk about it, and she's like, and my life is the opposite. Take, you know, back surgeries, take wars, take cancers, moves, burnouts, whatever can end. And we talk about this a lot. You know, she's envious in a way. She's in a way, she's like, but nothing ever happens to me, even if I try, you know. But so she helped me to, in a way, to embrace this crazy life of mine. That's one thought, because it, as hard and difficult and painful as it is, it's also extremely, I've learned to appreciate how, I don't know how to call it, but how it is. It just is. My life is. It's so present and so thick and, you know, so powerful. And like, and I'm like, okay, life, thank you. If you want to be this intense, good. But also, you know, I spoke to my dad right now after his surgery, and in my opinion, had a very calm life in a way. You know, nothing really, until now, until this recent surgery, nothing bad. And he told me, my life was always so difficult. And I'm sitting here with all my experiences. I'm like, no, you know, you had a very calm, easy life. That was a huge spiritual awakening for me, because I realized that we choose, you know, life is life. It's like this or like that. Mm. And we choose with our attitudes. Do we want to say, the shit of life was so difficult, no matter if something really difficult happened or not? Or do you want to say like, yeah, shit happened in my life, but you know what? It's beautiful. Look at this blue sky behind me and these pink roses. I mean, come on, life is awesome. It's only one. And it's so amazing. So I really, really have a feeling that we have to choose, and we have to embrace it, even with all these harsh things. And maybe sometimes these harsh things may make it even more valuable and deeper and stronger and more intense and more unique and more ours.
Yeah. And you said something before about when you're talking about, you know, you don't get attached to possessions and things. And I feel, I mean, I do have a tendency to keep things with sentimental value. But I think that when you do go through a massive shake in your life for whatever reason, it does kind of ground you in thinking, well, you know, life can change in such an instant that a lot of these things don't matter. Yeah. The stuff doesn't matter.
Yeah. For me, losing my mom was such a big lesson on life as Not huge. Only because I survived it. I didn't think I will. You know, my mom and I were so close. We were really, she was my best friend and my sister and my mom and my just, we were so close that losing her, I really, if I didn't have Kai, my son, I'm not sure what would have happened, but I just knew he was 2 years old and I knew I have to be functional. Like, there's no, I can't lie in the bed and cry for 3 days. Like, I just, I knew that for him, I have to, and that made it much easier to go through that. But it was very, a big lesson seeing what she's remembered for and what she left behind. And my mom was an extremely successful movie actress back then in Yugoslavia. And also she was really very famous and successful and celebrated and awarded. And she was like a huge star. And parallel to that, she had a career as an artist. She finished the Academy of Arts. And she was a graphic designer and designed some books and jewelry. And she was equally awarded and successful with her art, you know. And so she was this very present, big, professionally, like, big person. But now that she's gone, you know, and you see, I was so touched because people would call me or text me or find me on Facebook and be like, I'm going to miss her. I'm going to miss her smile. I'll miss meeting her on the street and her saying, let's have coffee. People just miss the person and the moments they shared with her and who she was as a human being. That was a big lesson for me in life, that what really matters and what we leave behind is the joy that we share, spread, you know, that how we touch other people. I think that was important. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. It's, you know, it's really funny as you're talking, because I was thinking, and I've shared about this so many times, I guess for my listeners, that, you know, leading up to cancer, I just had one thing after another happen and life just kept unraveling, and then I got cancer and I thought, really? Really? And I used to, I went through a lot of sort of, I don't know, grief or just kind of, mm-hmm. It can be challenging, because one of the things was is that my dream had always been to move to London and live and work for a while, because I have a British passport through my dad, and that has, because of a few things that happened, I couldn't go. And for a long time, I grieved that, because I just, yeah, I guess, you know, when it's a dream, and I know it's a privileged dream to be able to sort of think, oh, I wish I could have moved overseas. But I look at my life now, and it is a lot simpler, but it's even just little things like, you know, we have our dogs and my cat and my partner, and even just the simple life we lead, and really enjoying just having that of going out as a couple and, I guess, a family with our dogs, and just, you know, the joy that can bring. And I think, that dream did not happen, but this other life is happening. And I think sometimes, it's important to sort of see that. Yeah, because I think it's very easy to get stuck in that, what have I lost?
Oh, but I didn't go to London. But listen, when something like this happens to you, and I thank God it didn't happen to me, but I've, you know, people I loved, I think you really learn to love, as I just said, and I'm not meaning it as a joke, like, I look at this blue sky, this beautiful day today, and I'm like, this is amazing, you know? Every time you can be present and alive and look at this blue sky, that's a gift, and that's an experience, and that's, and what I'm trying, I'm talking to my husband, and I'm like, you know, when you learn to feel this joy, then you spread it. And I, again, I'm going back to, and then when you start spreading this joy, that's what really matters.
Yeah.
But I still want you to go to London at one point. Just for, you can go for maybe 2 months and be like, you know what? I did it for 2 months and I don't like it. I'm going back to my dog.
Exactly. I do love London. I have been to London. So there's, you know, I have. Yeah. Because I think, I don't know about you, but I feel, you know, with COVID, because I've had these experiences of life changing and you having no control over what's going on, it's been a little bit easier to kind of go, oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, it's okay. But it helped me. In the beginning, when everybody was like, oh, my God, what's going on? I'm like, people, you know, you the only thing you have to do is lock yourself in your house or your apartment, watch TV, work from home, order food. Like, you don't have bombs flying on your head. You don't have, you're not, you know, you'll be alive tomorrow. Like, it's a huge, once you experience things like that, it is easier to cope with something like this. Like, oh, COVID, lockdown, fine. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not the worst thing in the world.
I wanted to sort of jump back a little bit because I read it, and I will post this in the show notes so other people can read it, because you wrote a really beautiful article in Medium, and it said, one of the quotes that I really liked is, cancer is a spiritual journey as much as it is a physical one. It's a journey in which you have to learn to listen to yourself and trust yourself and your life. And I think you have touched on that a bit, but I would love you to tease that out a little bit more, and especially when it comes to, I guess, if you are with a loved one who has cancer, about trusting them as well in terms of what they want.
It's funny, as a writer, you put these amazing sentences down in that moment, and then later it's like, whoa, now I have to elaborate on this. And something, you, when you send me this quote, I'm like, wow, I'm clever.
I'm like, it's a really good quote. I'm pretty good at this.
So I have to tune back in into what space of mind that I was in there. But this is exactly what we talked about how cancer is a spiritual journey, in the sense that it, both for the patient and the families, it brings so many lessons, and it does give you an opportunity to spiritually, I don't have a different word for that, I don't like spiritual so much because it sounds kitschy, but to develop as a human being and as a person, one can embrace that or not, you know. People can just heal themselves and be like, yeah, something, it was a hiccup. But when you're watching mortality in the eyes in that moment, either as a patient or as you know, as a family member, I think it really, really throws many lessons out there. And I can generalize, because I think the lessons are different for every person. Like, for me, the lesson was to allow everybody to go through their own process, you know, to as we spoke about that, to allow them to learn their lessons and to allow them to find their path and their way of dealing with this, and to just gently support them on it, through it. And I think the biggest lesson it is spiritually, is also what we already talked about, is just how magical it is to be alive. You know, how we shouldn't sweat the small things. It for me, it was such a huge thing to face all these diagnoses. And every time we hear a new one, it makes me appreciate these simple things and just normal life. Just normal life is amazing. It's luxury. It's you know, just life where nobody's sick and there's no special stress. That's a luxury that should be celebrated. I have a friend who opens a bottle of champagne with her husband every Friday evening just to celebrate that everything's normal. How awesome is that? You know, it's like, no, every Friday evening, if nothing bad happens, like, just to celebrate that life just is normal. You celebrate. I love that. So that
I love it. The biggest, I love it.
It was, and it was hard, but I'm so grateful for it, because I really live my life to a much fuller degree now and enjoy it much more, because I don't take it for granted that I can just walk out of the house now and go for a walk. What a luxury is that? You know, like, wow.
It's pretty amazing. I kind of feel like it's a good thing and a bad thing for me, because I have a low tolerance for bullshit. And so sometimes I think, has anyone died though? Is this really that?
I know, me too. Totally low tolerance. It's like, and unfortunately I have low tolerance with my husband, although he was the patient. He's still like sweating the small stuff. And I'm still like, did you have this diagnosis twice in all your life? Like, did you learn that this shit is not important? Yeah. Look, you're alive, you're healthy. We are here. Everything's awesome. Yeah, it's interesting how you have a low tolerance.
It's really funny. Well, it has been such a pleasure to talk to you, and I'm so glad you shared your story. It is, yeah. Cancer is such a shitty thing. It really is. And I don't wish it upon anyone to either have it or experience it with a loved one. But I feel that I'm really privileged that people share this part of their life with me because I, you know, it is such a personal thing. So thank you so much for sharing your story.
You're welcome. Thank you for inviting me. It was wonderful.
Thanks so much for joining me. The C Word Kiwis Talk About Cancer is every Sunday at 11:55 a.m. on Auckland's 104.6 Planet FM and anytime at planetaudio.org.nz/the C Word. Come say hi to me on Facebook. I'll see you next time.
shut eye till the morning. Me and my baby in the night air. Love all night, cause you don't care. Live as long as we make love.
officer, how can it be? You can arrest everybody, but Cool Staggerly, that bad man, Cool Staggerly. Told Staggerly, please don't take my life. I got two baby children, darling, love and wife. That bad man, Cool Staggerly. You two babes and darling loving wife, you done stole my Stetson hat. I'm bound to take your life. That bad man, Cool Staggerly. Staggerly stared on the gallows head way up high. 12 o'clock they killed him. We were all glad to see him die. That bad man, Cool Staggerly.
This is why my eyes are closed. it's just as well for all I've seen. And so it goes, and so it goes, and you're the only one who knows. So I would choose to be with you. That's if the choice were mine to make. But you can make decisions too, and you can have this heart to break. This is why my eyes are closed. It's just as well for all I've seen. And so it goes, and so it goes. And you're the only one who knows. salt from my stinging skin. Slip me loose of this wedding band. Soap and water. It clean to a vinegar shine. Daddy's a dark riddle. Mama's a head full of bees. You are my little kite, carried away in the wayward breeze. Thank you.
didn't know his name, I didn't know his name. He had a long chain on. 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 He killed another man. He killed another man. He killed another man. He killed another man.